Radhika Jones, editor-in-chief of Vanity Fair. If you enjoy binge-watching the best TV shows and love hearing from the actors and showrunners who make them happen, then subscribe to Vanity Fair. Our Hollywood reporters take you behind the scenes of the year's most anticipated projects, the industry's biggest moves, and the hardest-fought awards races. From The Crown to The Real Housewives, we've got the inside scoop. As a special thank you to our still-watching audience, we're offering 15% off a yearly digital subscription to Vanity Fair. Visit vanityfair.com today and use promo code POD15. That's vanityfair.com, promo code POD15 for 15% off a yearly digital subscription to everything you want.
Welcome to Still Watching WandaVision. I'm Vanity Fair senior writer Joanna Robinson.
And I'm Vanity Fair chief critic Richard Lawson.
If you are just joining us for the first time in the middle of WandaVision, what we do every week on this podcast is that it's usually just Richard or me. Usually we break down a TV show that we are currently watching and sort of obsessing over. For this very comic booky show, we have brought on our colleague Anthony Bresnahan. He will join us in the back half, or join me in the back half, to get like very granular about some very nerdy shit. But Richard is here to be reasonably granular about some comic book stuff as we discuss the latest episode of WandaVision episode 6. Richard, I mean, overall, I just really want to quickly hear your overall, like, where would you rank this among the other WandaVision episodes?
Pretty high, I think, because I think, one, they really nailed the sitcom parody in this episode, mm-hmm. For a variety of reasons that we can get into. And two, I just thought the way it balanced the sitcom trappings with the larger mystery felt that it was a good mix, you know. And I think that it also intriguingly provided not answers, but sort of further clues to kind of lead us down a theory path, you know, while maybe precluding others. You know, I think it's starting to clarify things. You know, there are three episodes left, so this is about when they should be doing that.
Excellent. So we will get into all of that. We are discussing episode 6, all new Halloween spooktacular exclamation mark. So if you haven't seen that episode yet, you're going to want to hop off until you do. We usually have an interview on this podcast with someone involved in the production of the show, a cast member, a writer, et cetera. We do not have an interview this week, but we have a supersized interview next week with, and I think I'm pronouncing this correctly, Paul Bettany. Paul Bettany? Yeah.
That's how they say it in Brittany. Yeah.
The Bettanys of Brittany. So, Paul Bettany will be joining us, no less than Vision himself, next week to talk about everything that's going on. He had a very tough time at the end of this episode. We also love to read your emails. You can always email us, stillwatchingpod@gmail.com. We got a bunch of emails sort of early in the morning this week as well. So all of you midnight viewers of WandaVision were emailing us, and that was really fun. Richard's going to read a couple, and then we've got a couple we'll be reading in the back half with Anthony as well. So Richard, what do you got for us?
Well, first up, we have an email from Miles, and he writes, I started reading the comic Vision, which is so dark and angsty. I love it. I bought this comic after reading House of M, eager for more clues and plot lines relating to the show WandaVision. I just finished the recent episode and found a fun parallel to a part of the Vision comic. In the comic, Vision's brother, I forget his name, comes to live with the Vision family under the guise of a caring uncle. He's later revealed to be a spy trying to understand Vision's motives behind the idyllic family life he's created for himself. in the recent episode of WandaVision, the fast, hot one, Wanda's brother, does the same thing, probing Wanda for details as to how she's done all this, control an entire town. I assume Evan Peters, the hot one, was sent in to figure out what Wanda is up to, maybe by some well-meaning Avengers or X-Men, like in the Vision comic. Anyway, it seems to not work in the comic. I haven't finished it yet. Also, there's a harrowing scene where the witch Agatha kills a cat, and I found it very triggering. Also, who is Wonder Man? Actually, never mind. I don't care. And now, Joanna, are you ready for a twist?
I'm ready.
A twisty email about a twisty show. Miles continues. Love hearing Richard and Joanna talk about the show. And hi, Richard. The cats miss you and send their love. Joanna, this is from my old roommate, Miles.
Oh, my God. The emailer was your roommate all along.
Yeah. He has two wonderful orange tabby cats and who I used to live with when they were little kittens. So hello, Miles. Thank you for the email. And I think that, you know, he brings up some really interesting theories about this episode, which is, did Wanda really just quote unquote recast her brother, mm-hmm. and the show is being clever by using a different Quicksilver from a different studio's version of a Marvel property? Or is there some other motivation for why the Evan Peters version, who, yes, by the way, like I would kill for him, is he there with a little bit more agency than he's letting on?
I mean, he definitely seemed very, you know, you can trust me. Tell me, how are you doing all this? There was a lot of suspicious lines of questioning in this episode. I think it's a really good question for Miles. Also, he thoughtfully attached photos of said cats. So thank you for that, Miles.
Oh, yeah, there they are. He got a new rug, too. It looks good.
I remain convinced that this is the Quicksilver from the Fox universe. I remain convinced that's true, but there is a lot of things pointing in different directions in this episode. Like, for example, when she flashes to a dead version of his body and he's got the bullet holes in him, that's how, you know, in the Fox universe, Quicksilver's still alive. That was the fate of Aaron Taylor Johnson's Quicksilver in Ultron. So, you know, he has like that Quicksilver's memories. He dodges the question when she's definitely trying to test him on whether or not, you know, he has the same Sokovian memories that she does. And he is interrogating her. So there's a lot of suspicious stuff going on with Quicksilver here. I have like a really, really, really nerdy Anthony level theory about what's going on there, but mm-hmm. I will agree that it is very suspect. What do you think? What do you suspect, Richard?
Well, another emailer messaged us about kind of all of the deep diving into multiverse stuff that seems to be maybe contained within this show, but also isn't going to be in the next Spider-Man movie and will be in the Doctor Strange movie coming up. An Ant-Man movie has kind of already delved into a bit of that and will continue to. So I'm assuming that there's a reason they didn't just cast a random actor. You know what I mean? Like mm-hmm. there is a method to this. And I guess my question is, how much this Pietro knows. And because, you know, the other thing is the Quicksilver in Days of Future Past, the X-Men movie, he's like, he does not have the same storyline from what we can tell, you know?
Right, right. Yeah.
At all. And he's like a kind of slacker kid in his basement who like fucks around, you know, like, so it's not the same person. I mean, it's the same character, but so I don't know. I would have to assume that this is not just some kind of little glitchy, like parallel thing, that there is a bigger reason why, he's there and definitely has a clearer sense of why he's there than he's letting on.
The brother that Miles is referring to in the Vision comics is Victor Mancha, who is a Runaways character. Things do not go well for him spying on the Vision family in that comic book. Spoiler for Miles, I suppose. Things don't go well for anyone in that comic book. It's very dark. But yeah, it's interesting what they're plucking from different comics and how they're refiguring it. It's really, really fascinating to me, the sort of mixed cocktail they've made out of about four different major comic books And we'll talk a little bit more about those. What other emails do you want to talk about, Richard?
We have an email from, well, maybe they want to be anonymous. I don't know. JS, let's say. They say, they bring up a little kind of background detail from this episode. On the movie marquee, they write, it very clearly has the movie The Incredibles listed along with The Parent Trap. If we're keeping with the decade-by-decade format, this is the 90s, correct? Is there a movie from the 90s with the same name as the animated 2000s film, or are they combining both the 90s and 2000s into one episode? Obviously, it could be seen as a reference to a superhero family, since the youngin gets his powers right after, but it seems strange to throw the wrong decade in for a meticulous show like this. Well, I guess my answer to that would be, it's not the wrong decade. this episode is clearly parodying directly Malcolm in the Middle, which is a show that started in 2000. And I think the reason why we didn't get, I guess, what you could consider a full 90s sitcom is that family sitcoms in the 90s were around, certainly, but they weren't as, like, cool. They weren't Friends mm-hmm. or Seinfeld. You know, they weren't ironic. You know, Home Improvement was around for a long time, but that was sort of, you know, middle of the road, not really zeitgeisty. And Wanda seems to be really responding to the zeitgeisty things, which, like, a show like Family Ties was in the 80s, or Full House, but Full House continued into the 90s. So I think that the last week's episode was encompassing a sort of 90s ethos, and now we're moving into a different TV era of television families, right?
Yeah, and we talked about this a little bit. I agree with you. We talked about this a little bit when the very first episode was very clearly doing Dick Van Dyke. It was their quote-unquote 50s episode, but the Dick Van Dyke Show premiered in the 60s. So, like, I think they're being a little loose with their decade-defining sitcoms. And I think you're right that we're getting – between Family Ties and Malcolm in the Middle, we're getting sort of like a loose bridge over the 90s.
Yeah.
Like early 90s, late 90s sort of representing these two things. I think some people had thought – I had thought, because there's a shot of a very familiar Afghan in the WandaVision trailer and some of the art, that we would be getting a Roseanne episode. And a lot of people thought the 90s episode was going to be a Roseanne episode. But that does not – this is, yeah, as you said, very clearly a Malcolm in the Middle episode. I think the Afghan that – do you know what I'm talking about? The mm-hmm. the Afghan that sits on the back of the yeah. Roseanne couch? I think that might come into – I think what we might see as things wrap up here is some sort of like sitcom scramble.
Yeah.
And in
yeah.
the sitcom scramble, you might see that iconic couch throw from Roseanne. But yeah, this is Malcolm in the Middle. The Parent Trap, I think it's really interesting. There's a lot of references to parents, specifically Wanda's parents, in this episode. So I think that's one of the reasons why The Parent Trap, which was, I think, came out in 94, was up there. And I think it is a little like sort of winking nod to, like, we're doing the 90s, but we're doing the early aughts at the same time. I also wanted to point out that in the intro, I think we talked about this. I think I talked about this with you, Richard, but maybe just with Anthony. In the intro to the 70s episode, during the opening credits, you see on the marquee at that movie theater, they're playing Oz the Great and Powerful, which is a 2000s movie, 2010s movie. So they're, you know, they're having fun with that marquee in different ways than just like decade faithful films.
Yeah. Yeah. Cause like The Incredibles came out 6 years after, you know, Nancy Meyers' Parent Trap movie, but in Wanda's brain, maybe they're kind of all swirled into one era.
Right.
They are for many people, you know, they're the adolescent movies of millennials, like older millennials like us, you know? You know, I think that specifically to the Malcolm in the Middle issue, I just think that they got it so correctly. You know, the filming
yeah.
style, the humor, the music, the opening credits, the font, you know, like, it was just so well observed. I would have to imagine that's owed to both the age of Wanda, that this is a more pertinent show for her in a way. It was contemporary with her rather than a kind of nostalgia piece when she was younger.
Right.
And also that's so true of the people making the show. You know,
right. I was like, Matt Shakman, who directed all the episodes, like, that's, you know, it makes sense that that would be a a show that he would be really dialed into. It's so funny. Like, I'm like aware of Malcolm in the Middle. I think I've watched like a couple episodes, but I'm not like a Malcolm scholar. I did watch an episode to prep for this because I knew it was sort of a Malcolm pastiche. But I am aware of that larger 90s. It reminds me a lot of like Nickelodeon sort of
Pete and Pete
sitcom-y yeah. stuff. Yeah, Pete and Pete, exactly. So they just smashed it out of the park. With this one. I mean, I think the kids, the over-reliance on the kids wasn't my favorite because I don't, you know, like, I would rather, like, be with the adults. But that's, you know, for a Malcolm in the Middle episode, that's, of course, like, where you're going to be for a lot of it. So,
But I think also if the kids are presumably, well, now they're coming into their powers, presumably they will be older, maybe teenagers next week. Like, you had to get to know them a little bit, you know?
It
makes sense to me, you know, and I don't know. I think that there is, maybe I'm overreaching now, but like, you know, Malcolm in the Middle premiered 2000. It was both a synthesis of Nickelodeon kind of quirky shows, of Roseanne kind of, you know, middle class kind of family scramble, you know, that they were not wealthy at all. And then the world really, or certainly America really changed about a year later. And everyone said, oh, is irony dead? No, it wasn't. It just changed and all this stuff. A show like that, like the year 2000, like it represented the sort of beginning of something and the end of something, which I think is really a parallel to what's happening in Wanda's world in this episode, where the kind of the veil is being ripped from her eyes and other people's eyes. They are seeing the sort of like gone is the bright lit multicam fantasy of an older sitcom. Here is an attempt at more like sober reality, but with humor and with, you know, and I think that that's really well mirrored on both sides of the episode, the parody stuff and the mythology stuff.
I love that. Any other emails you want to read?
I don't have any starred, but I think you might. Is that correct?
Well, I have one correction that I want to read, and then, like I said, Anthony and I will get into some of the nerdier stuff, but there's this email from Steve who wrote in after last week's episode to correct me on something. I think I accidentally gave Marvel and Kevin Feige a little too much credit for – I said, you know, if they pull off what is rumored that they're going to do in Spider-Man, the upcoming Spider-Man, which is bring in like Andrew Garfield's Spider-Man and Tobey Maguire's Spider-Man, and put them all together. You know, that will be like one of the most ambitious franchise blendings before. And Steve reminded me that on the DC Arrowverse on TV, which is something that I have watched very faithfully in the past and then fell off a bit. In December 2019, they did their Crisis on Infinite Earths crossover, which is actually even more ambitious than I was aware of on the margins of it. So they brought in Superman Returns, the 1990 Flash TV series, Tim Burton's Batman, Smallville, Lucifer, Birds of Prey TV series, Adam West Batman series, you know, Zack Snyder's Justice League, because Ezra Miller's Flash and Grant Gustin's Flash were in it and stuff like that. So there is a precedent for this in the Arrowverse, and I apologize to DC fans for not giving it its due. So there's my correction for that.
Well, a listener named Steve did write in asking a kind of more summative question about WandaVision's place in the MCU and everything. He said, it's pretty obvious with the show Spider-Man's Doctor Strange that it's all going to lean hard into alternate realities and parallel universe. I'm wondering how you feel about if the general audience will be on board with this or able to keep up. I ask because several of my friends who are casual MCU watchers are already lost and frustrated by the show. The Evan Peters bomb was lost on them entirely. And then he goes on to just kind of wonder, like, is this now going too far? Because, as he writes, most of the Avengers so far have been basically beefed up military types or science tech based, not these kind of fantastical things. And now, I mean, but I would argue Thor,
Doctor Strange. I think with Doctor Strange, or like Guardians of the Galaxy with like a talking raccoon and a tree, like when that stuff really hit, I think Marvel was emboldened to be like, okay, we don't need to just do super soldiers anymore, right? I take Steven's point though, and Steve's point here, and I think that like, if someone, I think they're aware of that. I think they're aware that the Evan Peters Quicksilver bomb is not going to be the big revelation that it is for some people. You know what I mean? And it's why I have questions about, you know, in this episode, in the previous episode, Monica has been teasing this like super scientist aerospace engineer guy that she knows. And that's launched a bunch of theories about like, who could it be? Anthony and I were talking about it last week. We were entertaining some ideas about some women it might be, but she, in this episode, she said, my guy. So a very popular theory that feels like a little bit of a, I am about to use the word stretch. I apologize. Is that maybe it is, John Krasinski as Reed Richards. And that's the kind of, you know, they're being very coy. She's not saying who it is. So whoever it is, the reveal is supposed to be like an oh my God moment. But hopefully not just an oh my God moment for people who, you know, because there's another character called Blue Marvel. People think it might be that. But I was like, but why would they hide that? Because that's not going to be a big bomb drop for people watching who are more casual viewers. But I think if John Krasinski shows up and, you know, people are a little more aware of the Fantastic Four than they are of the character Blue Marvel, like something like that might feel like a bigger bomb. Do you know? But yeah, it's true. Like they are gambling on their audience coming along with them for some big swings right now. And I'm curious about you, Richard. Like I know you've seen every Marvel movie, and the Fox X-Men, and you know, presumably a Fantastic Four or two, but you know, is WandaVision in danger of losing you on that front?
No, and actually kind of, I feel the opposite, and I probably don't speak for, you know, a ton of Marvel, you know, casual watchers here, but like, I kind of embrace the world of this, the universe of this going in a more fantastical direction. Because I would really like it if they could get a little bit unmired from like the military industrial complex stuff. And I think that so much of that has, I mean, you know, they consult with the US military, right? And it has this kind of imperialist energy to it that I don't love and have never really, grooved with. And not to say that X-Men and other fantastical things don't have their political allegories, but actually a lot of like X-Men has always been viewed as like a metaphor for difference, for queer people, for people of color, for, you know, anyone who is marginalized, and is fighting for their dignity and their civil rights, you know? And I think that's a much more interesting direction for all of this to start pointing in, than these questions of, you know, super, you know, Uber, what is it? Uber mentioned kind of this objectivist stuff that a lot of the Avengers movies have kind of been rooted in. So I welcome it. I don't know that the other people are going to feel the same way. But I also think it helped that I grew up watching the X-Men animated series and not, I didn't have any of my own, but I would covetously look at my friends' X-Men trading cards and learn all about, you know, Polaris and Havoc and all these other people who weren't on the show. Although Polaris, by the way, has a relationship to the Scarlet Witch in some of the lore, right? In that, isn't she her sister slash they're both Magneto's daughter?
I mean, I feel like everyone is Magneto's kid at some point. You know what I mean?
Right.
So I did want to talk to you about that. Well, what's interesting is the rumors that I've heard from Falcon and the Winter Soldier is that, which is the next show up, which is a much more traditionally straightforward, militaristic, punch 'em up sort of show, and what's supposed to be the first show of the Disney Plus era. But what I've been hearing lately about that show is that it will also be interrogating that sort of militaristic might is right super soldier idea that is foundational to Marvel. And I think that is really exciting and potentially very interesting for Falcon and the Winter Soldier. And I also want to say in this episode, in this show, like we've got this, you know, we've had previous installments of Marvel, like Captain America, Winter Soldier, which is my favorite Marvel movie, which is based on like 70s paranoia, sort of spy thriller films. And in that one, like Hydra, which is like our Nazi analog, have infiltrated the highest halls of governmental power, right? And
That would never happen.
that's a really, really interesting thing. And in this episode, we've got this director character at S.W.O.R.D. And I mean, he is up to some shady nonsense, right? Like there's something very shady going on with him and his militaristic installation here. So I think that interrogation of militaristic governmental power and how it relates to like a post 9/11, homeland security, when Director Hayward is talking about, you weren't here after the snap. You don't know what it was like. So what we're dealing with is a world traumatized by a global terrorist event. You know what I mean? Like the population was, partially snuffed. And so you have these extreme reactions. A prevailing theory is that, you know, he's interested in Vision's body because he wants to turn Vision into like a weapon or a super soldier or whatever it is, you know, to defend us all from another Thanos-like event. And, you know, that's something that is familiar and something that it seems that the Marvel universe is looking at as a very bad move. So, you know, I think they're dancing around the edges of that already right now. Does that make sense?
Yeah, no, it does. And I think, you know, there was obviously the snap or the blip, I guess they're calling it in this. But also, they fucking ruined upstate New York in Endgame.
Yeah, yeah. I mean,
Hudson Valley is just like decimated.
the 9/11 parallels just like keep coming. I mean, because like this whole franchise, Iron Man, was inspired directly by, you know, the war in Iraq and stuff like that. So like that has been overhanging, but I think we're moving, you know, if this was a giant franchise started in the Bush era, moving through the Obama era, like the way in which it's responding to the Trump era is going to be interesting. Do you know? So,
yeah. Yeah.
All right. So let's just talk about a couple other things before we go. I want to ask you about how you're feeling about like what's going on with Monica in all of this.
Well, I always get creeped out when stuff starts to be like, oh, your like molecules are changing, and I think about radiation poisoning, and I don't think that changes your molecules. Maybe it does. I don't know. I was a theater major. But it's my vague understanding that Monica Rambeau does become a sort of Captain Marvel-esque figure in the world of all of this at some point in the comics, I think. And so I'm wondering if that's kind of what they're building toward, that this is not this change is not a deterioration, but a sort of heightened, quickened evolution of some kind. I think that this, you know, the movie versions of the Avengers world is always trying to find some pseudoscientific explanation for at least why the earthbound people have magical powers or whatever, you know, it was this experiment. It was that, you know, and so maybe this is an unwitting kind of experiment thing. I mean, no one is trying to do it to Monica. Well, I don't think, but it's having effects nonetheless. So I think that's kind of intriguing, and I am intrigued who her friend is. I mean, the John Krasinski thing is funny because like, you know, he was kind of like in the running for Captain America however many years ago. And this feels like maybe it was, could be not a consolation prize. Krasinski has done quite well for himself without Marvel, but, you know, just like, come on in, we got this for you. But yeah, I hope that Monica, in whatever is happening to her, like, well, as this show proves with, you know, Randall Park and Kat Dennings, like they do have loyalty to their repertory company, you know? So I would have to imagine if they're giving all this space and time to Monica in this series, that they have some pretty significant plans for her ahead.
Yeah. We know already that she's in Captain Marvel 2, and you know, they make mention again of Carol Danvers in this episode. So like, we have to think about how everything that Marvel is doing right now is also setting up like 9 projects that they already have in the hopper, right? So getting to know Monica here is going to make it so that when she's in Captain Marvel 2, those of us who watch this show already know her and are invested in her journey, right? I don't want to overpromise and underdeliver. I don't know that it's John Krasinski. I was very light on that theory last week, but when they doubled down again with another episode of saying like my guy, but not saying who it is, I'm like, it better be someone pretty good, honestly, to do that for two episodes in a row. So,
and it would track with the sitcom evolution.
It would be fun to have
John Krasinski give him a Jim smirk to camera or something.
Yeah. Yeah, it would be ideal. Anthony and I were talking about this last week. Do you remember that Randall Park played like replacement Jim in one episode of The Office?
It was
a Jim prank where like he sat in to like torture Dwight and stuff like that and pretended he was Jim all along. Anyway, that could be really fun. All right, so we've got all that. And like my feeling about Monica, given the way that she keeps talking about Wanda and given her own grief around her mother and stuff like that, is that my thought is that if Wanda loses control completely, Wanda keeps talking about control. She loses control completely of whatever it is she's trying to do here. And she's trying to do it in some sort of ethical way. That Monica, as someone who has experienced grief, could be instrumental in de-escalating Wanda by talking to her about grief and loss and how to actually process it versus living in denial, you know?
Yeah. Like,
that could be a really interesting de-escalation moment, rather than like the right person punching the right person, you know?
Something I was thinking about with the big ending, you know, the bubble expanding, further revealing that Wanda is like really, really powerful, is, oh, she might die at the end of this, you know, like kind of like, I mean, in the very bad X-Men The Last Stand, like Dark Phoenix kind of / Jean Grey does go away, you know? And then I was like, wait, but no, but Wanda's in the next Doctor Strange movie. And it's like, yeah, but which Wanda? Like, if this is all multiverse right. stuff, like, I kind of sure. feel like this one might die at the end of this, because that would, you know, set her children up on a sort of like orphan's journey, much like her and her brother. And then she could, you know, be with Vision in Eternity or however, you know, you want to look at that. But that wouldn't mean that Elizabeth Olsen's gone from the franchise, because she could pop back up as a different version of herself.
That's true. I mean, I do have on my list of questions to ask you, like, can Wanda come back from this? There's a lot of conversation in this episode between Wanda and Pietro about like, about the ethics she's using in creating this bubble universe, that he says, you know, you've kept families together, couples together, all personalities are not that far off from the original personalities. Everyone has a better job and you let the kids sleep through it, except for like, you know, basically he was like, where have all these kids been this whole time? And it's basically implied that they've just been sleeping when it wasn't like a holiday episode where you needed kids running around. And so, you know, this idea of like, and she's like, really? Do you think it's okay what I'm doing? You know, and I'm like, are they setting up an ending where Wanda can come back from this and make amends and become a hero again? Or are they setting up an ending where she is the ultimate villain of Doctor Strange? Like, that might be, like, those are the two possibilities, right? We either have a repentant Wanda going into Doctor Strange 2, or we have a superpowered villainous Wanda going into Doctor Strange 2, or the third option, which is what you mentioned, which is like, with the multiverse, everything's on the table. Who knows? You know? Yeah. So, yeah.
I also think that the episode was careful to show, you know, that I think the conversation about the children was really interesting. But also, you know, the woman with the tear running down her cheek and, Agnes clearly, like, these people are in like real, like, psychic pain, you know?
Yeah.
Like, this isn't like, they're in kind of emotional, mental torment. And, I that doesn't, you know, if, you know, like you're talking about like a post 9/11 thing, this is just compounding the trauma. And Wanda already had those kind of misgivings about, what was it, happened in Lagos or something, right? Like, wasn't there?
Yeah. In Nigeria.
Yeah. So like, there's all of this kind of compounded stuff of like, Tony Stark can hang up the Iron Man suit and then, you know, die in the cause, you know, in the fight for whatever. Or Captain America can willfully just, you know, give the shield to someone else and go back in time and live a normal life. But like, Wanda is so powerful, and it's something that's so within her that there might not be any reconciliation with that. Now that people know what she can do, how could she ever live, you know, among people again?
I mean, that is the question. you know, and it's a big one. And I am very curious to see how it handled. I would rather see a redemption for her than for her to go full villain and have to die. But we'll see if the show can figure out an answer, because I still believe that there is someone else controlling all of this beyond Wanda. And so in that way, she could seem more of a victim than anything else. Do you know? We'll see.
Yeah.
You know, because Agnes in this episode, like, yes, she is seemingly like tortured, but also, you know, everyone's dressed as their comic book costumes. She's dressed as a witch. In the opening credits, she's got the word naughty on her butt in her very early aughts juicy yeah. pants. You know, she's able to talk on the edge of town when everyone else is like nonverbal and frozen. So there's just something like there's something else very much still going on with Agnes. She's not just a victim is what I would say. Do you know what I mean?
Yeah. Yeah.
So, yeah. Last couple things before we go, the kids getting their powers. Mm-hmm. So just to make sure that everyone like knows. So Tommy in the comic books is Speed. He's the one who calls himself the cool twin. He's dressed like his uncle. They're both speedsters. So that's Tommy. And then Billy is known as Wiccan in the comics. He's Tommy's bisexual, Billy is homosexual. So that's the kid that Richard and I have been talking about a lot. His powers are a bit more vague, but they involve, he's much more like his mom, like telepathy, sort of able to move objects and stuff like that. So like he's got
like
more...
all gay people can. I have never shown I've never shown that to you, but because it's like kind of a private thing. But yes, I can.
Well,
do
thank
all
you.
That.
Thank yeah. you for pulling me into your inner circle. I really yeah. appreciate it. Do you want to say anything about the shark commercial or the hex swallow? Oh, well, the commercial we were going to cover really quickly and say we got an email asking a common theory about the couple that keep showing up in these commercials. And they're not in this commercial unless they're voicing the shark, and I didn't know it. But like, is that those people will wind up being Wanda's actual parents. So if we get, like I said, there was a lot of talk about parents in this episode. So if we get a reveal of Wanda's parents, it will be played by these two actors who we've seen in these commercials over and yeah. over again. And that will be a nice little bit of familiarity. So we aren't just like, who are these people? What are they doing here? Sort of thing. That's underlined a bit by the fact that especially though the woman in the 70s and 80s commercials has classic Wanda hair from the comic books, this like long perm situation. Mm-hmm. So there's that. Do you have any thoughts about the shark commercial itself, Richard?
Well, it's telling, obviously, that like the thing turns the kid turns into a skeleton, you know?
Yeah.
Like,
yeah, yeah, yeah.
Like that's that kind of decay is clearly on Wanda's mind.
Yeah. It's like the yogurt's called Yo Magic, I think, right? And it's like snacking on your Yo Magic. And this idea of like, if you're starving here, feed on this magic. And so I have a couple theories about that. One is like, whoever instigated this hex thing is feeding off of Wanda's magic. Or Wanda in her grief was looking for something to feed off of and, you know, is feeding off her own magic. But ultimately, that is not a sustaining thing to be feeding off of. Ultimately, you will die on that island, I guess. So mm-hmm. It's a very dark commercial.
Yeah.
And last thing, the hex swallow. So the hex expands. I think Jimmy and Monica stayed ahead of it. The sword director stayed ahead of it, unfortunately, but first in, Kat Dennings, sitcom Kat. What do you think, Richard?
Well, if they're going to move into like the kind of, you know, aughts or early 2010s like mockumentary thing, she'd be good for that. I mean, she was on her own sitcom, but that was more multicam and kind of I don't know that they would go a Two Broke Girls route, but they might, you know, especially if what you said, if things start to go screwy and you know, all of her references start to jumble more than they mm-hmm. already have been. Mm. But yeah, I thought that was like, it was an exciting kind of visual. And I would imagine that, you know, It was probably scary, given that she knew that, like, this changes your molecular structure.
Yeah.
She was probably like, oh, God, this is actually really bad.
I don't know if you were watching with the closed captions on. It was hard to hear with, like, the sound of the hex going. But, like, she starts, like, an oh, fuck, but it ends with fudge as she gets swallowed by the hex. So
yeah, that was really cute. Clever. And all the people turning into clowns and stuff.
Yeah, the sword circus. Yeah, so I don't know if she's going to be, like, part of the sword circus or my pet theory had been that the hex would swallow sword and we would get, like, an office workplace comedy, like, the office to go with, like, the Modern Family talk to camera stuff that was going to be going on with Wanda in the next episode. But seeing it all turn into a circus sort of kills my sword office theory, unless they do workplace comedy, but make it clowns, which they might. But I thought that was, like, a really fun, Wanda, it's always fun whatever Wanda turns things into. And she turned all these military tents into a circus. That was very clever. And like a bunch of cars into a used car lot and stuff like that. Very clever stuff right at the end there. All right. I think we did it, unless there's anything else you want to mention.
Well, I was thinking about the multiverse thing. Do you think there's any, and maybe there are some ethical questions here. Do you think there's any way we'll get a scene where Evan Peters and Aaron Taylor-Johnson, like, kiss or anything?
I'm rooting for it. For you, I would love to make that happen.
The Michael Fassbenders kissed in Alien Covenant, and that's owned by Fox, which is now owned by Disney. So they can just take that trope, throw it in here. Did we want to mention, by the way, a programming note about still watching about a special episode that we're doing? Are we there yet?
Let's do it.
Yeah.
Let's do it.
So we're obviously continuing with WandaVision through to the end. But there's a mini series coming to HBO Max next week on the 18th called It's a Sin that Joanna and I have both watched and loved so much that we decided to do a special episode about it on the Still Watching feed. So it's a bit of programming change. It's about a bunch of young Londoners in the early 80s dealing with the onset of the AIDS crisis. No superheroes. Well, there are extraordinary people in it, but not magical people. We just really like it. So we're going to take a little detour to talk about that. I interviewed one of the series stars, Ollie Alexander, and the creator, Russell T. Davies. So, yeah, keep an eye out for that. It's going to be a different kind of episode, but I hope it encourages people to watch It's a Sin, because it's definitely worth watching.
Yeah, so I think we're going to drop that. That drops on as a binge sort of on HBO Max, as Richard mentioned, on the 18th, which is a Thursday. Since we will have a WandaVision going up on the 19th, I think we're going to drop it a little later in the weekend. So give you all a chance to watch a couple episodes over the weekend and then hear, Richard's great interviews. I haven't heard them yet. I'm so excited to hear them. This miniseries is fantastic, and I really hope you all check it out. So we will be back next week with a couple episodes, including that one-off covering It's a Sin. And then before we say goodbye to Richard, I do want to circle back to your Evan Peters, Aaron Taylor-Johnson wish. and just mention, so I don't get any emails about it, that there's a very cute, if a little too on the nose, like, joke about the fact that Evan Peters and Aaron Taylor-Johnson were both in the film Kick-Ass, and there's a little moment where Evan Peters says Kick-Ass, and then or one of the kids actually says Kick-Ass, and then Elizabeth Olsen sort of reflectively goes, huh, Kick-Ass. And so I think that's the show lampshading that. So I just wanted to say that so that no one said, I can't believe you didn't mention Kick-Ass joke. Well, there it is. We mentioned it. So,
well, I guess that means we can expect Chloe Moretz and Nicolas Cage to show up,
Yeah, Nick Cage is actually who Monica is going to go meet.
And it will be Nicolas Cage, because he actually is stuck in a sort of multiverse situation, like
the real guy is.
So, yeah.
Well, it'll be both Nicolas Cage and Ghost Rider, the character that he played in an earlier Marvel film. Perfect. Okay.
Well, that was a documentary, though, so it's... Again, it's still Nicolas Cage, but
okay, perfect. All right, so Richard and I will be back next week with WandaVision Episode 7 and It's a Sin. Richard, thank you so much, and I'll talk to you soon.
Bye.
Hi, I'm Lale Arakoglu, host of Women Who Travel. Each story from our guests and listeners is totally unique and utterly personal. We love hearing about your first impressions when visiting someplace new.
my first trip to the Patagonia region was on the Argentine side. I couldn't believe the expansive territory. It's like being in Tibet. The emptiness and the harshness really, I found transformative.
Or a story told when safely back on dry land.
You know, things happened every single day. I ran out of gas on a jet ski in the middle of the ocean. And I was like, what if a sea creature comes to eat me? But then I'm delusional. I was like, I'll make friends with it and it won't eat me. And maybe I'll ride that back to shore.
That's how it works.
Yeah.
Join me, Lale Arakoglu, every week for more adventures on Women Who Travel, wherever you listen to your podcasts.
I'm Claire Fallon.
And I'm Emma Gray. We're culture writers, podcasters, and hosts of the show Love to See It.
Every week, we give an unapologetically feminist dissection of reality dating shows, rom-coms, and other romance narratives. We unpack all the weird messages they send us about love, sex, and dating.
And we dive into all the details with special guests like actors, authors, and cultural critics.
You can find Love to See It wherever you get your podcasts. New episodes drop every Tuesday.
Hello and welcome to part two of this very spooktacular episode of WandaVision. We are joined here, of course, by the great Anthony Bresnikan to talk about this Halloween episode, this Malcolm in the Middle episode of WandaVision. I got a fresh crop of new theories. I'm really excited. We're probably not getting Sword the Office, which was my favorite theory last week, now that Wanda has turned Sword into a circus, but... You know, maybe it'll be a circus office show. Who knows? But Anthony, is there anything off the top that you are most dying to talk about in this episode?
We could still get it. I'm keeping my fingers crossed for that. I mean, everything changes week to week, right? The format, the sets,
that's true.
The costumes.
That's true.
So, you know, it was Halloween and it was a very like Ray Bradbury-esque Halloween celebration in the town of Westview. So, you know, creepy circus fits right into that. But next week will be different, maybe. We'll see. We also got a little bit of a Christmas Story reference when Darcy gets swallowed by the hex and she goes, "Oh, fudge." Very Disney Plus way of allowing Darcy to express herself. But otherwise, exactly. Yeah, I think I'm very curious about Agnes now because it seems like she may not be in on it, or is she? Or is
all right, let's start with that theory of mine. Are you ready?
Yes.
I'm calling it, I've taken notes this week, I'm calling it the nightmare hopping theory. Okay, so like last week we talked about the possibility that like the character of Nightmare, this Marvel character who deals in like dreams, and feeding off people when they're in dreams and stuff like that, might be behind it all. Might be that the Agnes character might be Nightmare or something like that. I'm working on a theory about Nightmare still being involved, but maybe hopping around from like different bodies. So like when he's in Agnes, and he's very like busybody neighbor, intrusive. Like that's Nightmare there. But you know, if Nightmare's anywhere in this episode, he's definitely inside Quicksilver, right? Because he's just sort of like, "How you doing all this? How's this all working? What's going on here?"
Yeah.
Like all this sort of stuff like that. So like, I mean, I think it's supposed to make us very suspicious of Quicksilver, Evan Peters' Quicksilver as like a villain, and make Agnes look more innocent. But like, I'm saying, like, what if it's just like one villainous thing, sort of playing whatever character it needs to play in the moment. Do you know what I mean? Is that too,
yes.
too bonkers for you? How do you feel?
No, I think that's possible. And I think the key to this episode and maybe the whole series was the commercial this time around, which was a very 90s style kid show commercial with the claymation.
Yeah.
Little boy stranded on a desert island. Muscular shark hops out to give him some sort of sugar-packed yogurt container, which he cannot open. And it's called Yo Magic, and the shark is like, "I knew what it was like to starve too, but now I eat Yo Magic." So it's like, obviously, your magic. I think he's, I think there's a Pennywise thing sort of happening here, where if it's Nightmare or it's Mephisto or it's Agatha Harkness, this supernatural being is nourishing itself off of Wanda's pain, and it's allowing her to create this little biosphere of fantasy, and it can harvest a lot of pain and a lot of suffering and nourish itself off of her magic.
I think that's completely right. The word nightmare is used multiple times in this episode, but so is a language about hell and hellspawn and stuff like that. So the people who think it's Mephisto got their crumbs this week. The people who think it's a nightmare got their crumbs this week. So, you know, keep dreaming, folks. Keep theorizing.
The thing that I can't figure, you know, the hex that I can't square is that, you know, Agnes is so clearly wearing the brooch of Agatha Harkness.
Yeah.
You know, like, that's such a direct tell.
Yeah.
If you know the comics. So to say then, no, she's just like a townie, that doesn't quite wash for me.
I don't think she's a townie. I think that Quicksilver is actually Quicksilver. And I think Agnes is actually Agatha Harkness. I just think those people might be like infected by nightmare from time to time. Like Agatha, she's trying to get out of town, right? So like, let's follow my what if down a path, right?
Mm-hmm.
What if Agatha Harkness has like either made a deal with Nightmare or been infected by Nightmare or something like that, or they're playing with forces they can't truly handle. And so when she's in like busybody trying to, you know, make the twins grow faster, all this sort of stuff mode, that's a possessed Agatha. But let's say like Nightmare's like, I'm not getting everything I need, so I'm going to like inhabit this more trusted figure, this brother who can sort of wheedle and say, I'm your brother, you can tell me anything sort of stuff. Freeing the real Agatha, the real Agnes from that. And she's like, I got to get out of here. Like as soon as she's free, she tries to get out of town is sort of where my mindset's going. But when she's on the edge of town, she can, even before Vision sort of wakes her up, she can speak in a way that the other people on the edge of town can't. You know, she's still saying stuff like, where's the town square? I got turned around, like all sorts of stuff like that,
mm-hmm.
which to me means like she's more magical than your average town person. So I don't think she's a townie. I definitely think she's a witch, but I think she's a witch who might be either a willing or unwilling participant with this more demonic force. Does that make any sense to you?
It does. And I think she's dressed as a witch. That's her Halloween costume.
Right,
and everybody's
right.
costume, as you and I were chatting about before we started recording, mm-hmm. is reflective of like their origin and who they are. You know, all of the family is wearing, you know, we've got Wanda in her classic Scarlet Witch outfit from the comics. Vision has the green and yellow costume. Quicksilver, you know, creates the lightning bolt across the blue shirt look that he has from the comics. And I was scratching my head about the other kid, and you reminded me of Wiccan.
Yeah. So. Well, it's interesting to me because like last week Agnes said that thing where she was like, oh, you can't raise the dead. Like that was a moment where it seemed like she was sort of breaking character, and she was like, you can't raise the dead, like she thought Wanda could or something like that. Mm-hmm. And then she's trying to get out of town. Like I have questions about that. But I was rewatching all the episodes like a totally normal person would do. And in the episode where Wanda delivers the babies, I think it's really interesting that Agnes does not go inside the house in that episode. She's always inside the house, and she doesn't go inside the house in that episode. And instead there's that like stork just sort of like bopping around. She's just like, she's at the hedge. And she's not inside the house. And I feel like whoever is the villain of the series will always find a way to get inside the house, whether it's through Agnes, Pietro, Peter, or this like stork thing that just sort of manifested out of nowhere. Like that it will always be in like inside Wanda's like sanctuary. Do you know what I mean? That's sort of something I've been thinking about. So.
Huh. Intriguing. We didn't get an animal this time, did we?
Yeah, unless you count the claymation shark, we did not get an animal. So, it's interesting. that brings me to this other theory I have. This is my big brain theory for the week. And this is the Parent Trap theory, is what I'm calling it. So the Parent Trap is one of the movies that's playing on the marquee in the town square, mm-hmm. right? Presumably the 94 Nancy Myers movie, but maybe it's the Hayley Mills version, whatever it might be. A movie about twins. What fun. There's a lot of mention of Wanda and Pietro's parents in this episode. And I don't know if you noticed this, but Pietro has a mom tattoo on his arm.
Yeah.
That's actually Evan Peters' real tattoo. But in usually they would cover up a tattoo like that, but they definitely left it out there, like seemingly for a reason. So I have like a big Wanda's mom theory cooking in my brain. Are you interested in hearing it, Anthony?
I'm braced. I'm ready. Let's hear it.
Okay, so I don't know if you read Scarlet Witch, the 2015 Scarlet Witch, written by James Robinson, but no relation to me. But it was cited along with House of M and The Vision and Vision Quest, these various comics we've been talking about, as an inspiration for the series. And in that series, Wanda meets her mother on this sort of psychic space. Wanda and the ghost of Agatha Harkness are trying to figure out there's something wrong with witchcraft in the world. And they're trying to, like, fix it and heal it. And they go into this sort of psychic space called the Witch's Road. And on the Witch's Road, Wanda meets her real mom, who is not some random, you know, Sokovian lady, but a woman named Natalia, who is the original Scarlet Witch. So her mom is the original Scarlet Witch, and she meets her in this, like, psychic space, and she's dressed like, she's sort of dressed like the classic Scarlet Witch costume that Elizabeth Olsen is wearing this episode, but, like, make it Romanian Gypsy instead.
Mm-hmm.
And something that Elizabeth Olsen told me in her interview that she did on Still Watching a couple weeks ago was that originally for the Halloween episode, she wasn't going to be wearing this costume, which is the Scarlet Witch comic book costume. She was going to be wearing a sort of Romani gypsy-esque fortune teller costume, and they switched it to this one instead. And she calls it a Sokovian fortune teller costume, but you're looking at it, you're like, pink tights? Okay, sure. I don't know the right Sokovian culture, but sure. So I just feel like, you know, and there's that theory that the couple that we keep seeing in the commercials are actually like Wanda and Pietro's parents. So I just have this feeling that Wanda's mother was actually a witch, a powerful witch, the Scarlet Witch, perhaps, and that maybe she knew Agatha Harkness, and, like, you know, maybe Agatha who keeps calling herself Auntie A, Aunt Agatha, actually knew Wanda's real mom. That's my Parent Trap theory. What do you think?
How many episodes do we have left?
I know. No, I know. We've got 3 episodes left. I think they're going to be longer in running time.
Yeah, okay. In that case, yes. I think that's, I mean, it's like, it gets to be a kind of labyrinth, but I'm down for it. I think you're onto something. I like the theory about the couple. There's a reason they're using the same couple in the
right
commercials, although apart from this shark one, and I guess the bubble bath one, right? Or was it?
No, they're in the bubble bath one. They are? Yeah, okay. Yeah.
Yeah, I like it. I'm down for it. I think
it's interesting to me that in an interview, Catherine Hahn said that, like, when she was looking for inspirations for her character, you know, she mentioned, like, various wacky neighbors and Ethel and stuff like that. But she also mentioned Endora from Bewitched,
mm-hmm.
as, like, an inspiration. There's also that stuff in last week's episode where they've noted that Wanda seems to have, like, leveled up in her powers. And yes. As we know in the comics, Agatha is sort of, like, the one who trains. So, like, my idea is that Agatha and Wanda's mom were, like, witch friends. And Wanda trying to learn more about herself. Or maybe Agatha proactively goes searching out her friend's daughter to educate her about her powers, whatever latent powers she might have that are not related to the Mind Stone or something like that.
Yeah, yeah. No, I can definitely see that. Right.
And this, yeah, the Sokovia stuff just keeps coming up, like, in every episode. Even in the Dick Van Dyke episode, you know, like, Vision's like, oh, my wife's from Europe. Like, this is a Sokovian tradition. You know, like, the Sokovia stuff, which has been sort of sidelined, just keeps... I just feel like, you know, we got a flash to Wanda and baby Wanda and Pietro, like, trick-or-treating. I just feel like we're going to Sokovia. I feel like that's true. I feel like we're going to get, like, Monica, like, a sort of flashback episode where we're going to find out how it is that Agnes / Agatha Harkness, like, hooked up with Wanda in the first place. So I don't know.
I definitely think you're onto it. I mean, it's a good theory.
I always think I'm onto it, and I'm often wrong, so we'll see. But, you know.
No, the only thing I think, you know, the guardrails on these theories are, remember that Marvel likes to throw Easter eggs in for the diehard comics fans, but they never really plumb the depths of the relationships or the conspiracies or what have you. Like, it's never quite as deep as we like to project when they're, you know, when the ultimate plot is finally revealed. But you know, this is their first attempt at a TV show, and they have a lot more space, a lot more runway to explore. It's not just a 2-hour movie or 2-hour plus movie. So I think, you know, why not delve a little deeper into these two characters, Vision and Wanda, and, well, you know, and then Wanda and Pietro. I think that would be a worthwhile use of the time.
Something that our producer Dave was bringing up to me when I was, like, you know, badgering him with this theory of mine is that we're in a phase of Marvel where there is sort of a reckoning with, like, bad parents and parenting. Is like if you think of Ultron or Tony Stark as Vision's sort of, like, bad dad, you know what I mean? Like, if Wanda has, like, a witch mom who might be good or might be bad or whatever, but just, like, this reckoning with your parents and the generation that came before and the fallout of reckless power and all this sort of stuff like that. And especially as Wanda, something that I've heard, you know, my friends who have kids talk about is, like, this idea that, like, when you become a parent, that's when you really have to reckon with who your parents were, right? Or it can be an opportunity to do that. And so this idea that, like, Wanda as a mom and how that might connect thematically to, like, her mom and provide an opportunity for Monica to connect with her because she lost her mom. Like, there's all this, like, parent stuff sort of in the air here that I think is interesting, you know?
I definitely think that's true in terms of, like, having kids and reckoning with your own family and your own history. I think kids can often be your attempt to, you know, you introduce them to the things you love and you hope they love them too. But also, you hope to steer them away from the things that you wish you could change about yourself. You know, they really are little mini-me's. And then sometimes you see your own characteristics that you don't love turn up in them, and you just hope, like, well, maybe you'll be different, you know. And, of course, every parent messes up, too. Just it's the imperfection of it all. But I think, boy, we are going deep, right? It's soulful here. This is a soulful episode. Very special episode of watching.
I'm hopeful that they have room for all of that. You know what I mean? Like, they have said that they had 6 hours of story to tell. And that leaves actually a lot of room left for them if they wanted to do some supersized episodes and really delve into Wanda's mind and you know, the witchy history and all of that sort of stuff. I keep thinking about in the opening to the Family Ties episode, we see a shot of Westview, New Jersey from, like, horse and buggy times. So, like, you know, I don't know what sort of, like, history we're going to go into anywhere. I just think there are a lot of options. So let's talk about Vision. Like, I kind of see this as, like, a two-pronged attack on Wanda and Vision. I feel like there's a supernatural attack happening on Wanda. Someone's feeding off of her. Someone's manipulating her. Something's going on.
Mephisto, yeah, she's nightmare. Not fully in control. She's maybe powering this, but she's not necessarily in control.
So there's that, but then there's who's after Vision. And I think that becomes much clearer in this episode. We talked about it a little bit last week, but, like, you know, if you read the Avengers West Coast Vision Quest comic from 2005, where Wanda finds Vision in a million pieces on a table somewhere and loses it about that. You know, and we saw that surveillance footage of Wanda finding pieces of Vision in the sword complex. This idea of like what Director Hayward is interested in terms of Vision, like what's your sense of what's going on here?
It's funny because every time there's a new episode, I feel like my guess about what's going on shifts.
Which
I think is like a testament to the show, is that a lot of times I find I've just watched so many films and TV shows that I can kind of see where they're going. And I can gauge from the foreshadowing what ultimately is going to happen. And usually I'm right. And in this case, I think it's a testament to the freshness of the show that we really can't quite pin it down. And we're still guessing. As you say, you said there's like 6 hours left of...
No, I think a little less than 3 hours, I think.
Oh, a little less than three hours.
Like I would say if they wanted to, they could do 3 50-minute episodes with the running time they have left. I think that's right.
You know, and I think, I have to say, I think it's a testament to the showrunners that they've managed to keep us unaware, but still interested all this time. So, you know, I kind of, as I was watching this show, started to like, I mean, we're doing this program and this podcast, so we have to analyze it. And I definitely have that like program running in the background. But more and more, I'm just ready to let go and just let this show carry me wherever it wants to go, because it is so intriguing.
Yeah.
And I find that like sometimes you can just push a little too hard in your own mind as you're trying to analyze it and guess where things are going. It's got me a little mesmerized, charmed, I guess you might say.
Ensorcelled. Does it bother you if I like overanalyze?
No.
That's how my brain enjoys things. So
it usually is how I enjoy things. Yeah, but I find it thwarted so often that I'm like, okay, like this. And I keep thinking like, oh, maybe it's just not going to be that big a reveal. Like it's like
totally
you're being manipulated, right, by Skrulls or something. Who knows?
No, totally. Like, I think something that I've learned over the years, you know, and I've been doing these like theory shows for a long time, like Westworld and stuff like that, is like, you need to, I used to feel really stressed if something that I was guessing about was wrong. I try not to go too like wild with my guesses, though sometimes I do. But like, I think if you let go of like the fear of being wrong, then it just can be like, and even more importantly, I think, not being disappointed if it doesn't align with the theory that you've built up in your head. Because I think that can be a danger of a theory show, right? That you've built up some big, grand, huge idea and Marvel's like, keep it simple, stupid. Like, we're just trying to tell a story people can actually understand. We don't need to bring in like ancient Sokovian witches and like massive government conspiracy theories and stuff like that. So like, that's the cautionary, I think, around the speculation. But if you can keep those things in check, I think it can just be really fun week to week to let your imagination and the clues, the Easter eggs, the breadcrumb trails that they drop, you know, it's fun to snack on those between episodes, you know, so.
Definitely.
So what seems very evident, at least in this episode, is that Director Hayward is interested in Vision more than Wanda. We've talked before about the fact that that sword in the, as it existed in the comic books before this show, was Sentient World Observation and Response Department. But what it's called in the show is Sentient Weapon Observation Response Division. And this idea that like perhaps sword, and as Hayward mentions, like in response to the trauma of the blip, was looking to rebuild Vision's body in order to build their own super weapon, which was exactly what Vision didn't want to have happen to his body, right? That he become a weapon. So this idea that Hayward is pretending that this is about Wanda in any way, when really it's just about him getting Vision back, because that's his primary objective, right? something that when Darcy goes hacking into the computer, she finds a project called Project Cataract. And those are the files she emails to Jimmy before she gets sucked into the hex, right? Cataract is a word that means, you know, like impaired vision, right? Like that's what the word cataract means. It's about, you know, it's a flaw in your vision. It's a, like a broken vision sort of thing. So this idea, and there's been interest throughout the series in Vision's body. Like I'm thinking of episode 2 when there's like the gum in the works of his body. Like this idea of like what's holding Vision together? He falls apart as soon as he walks out of the hex. Like is he reanimated by Wanda's magic? Is there a way in which Sword can figure out how to replicate that? Like is that something they're interested in? To me it just seems really really clear that they want Vision's body for probably what they think is, you know, national defense purposes, but playing with fire in a way that would disturb certainly Vision and certainly Wanda. Do you know what I mean?
Without a doubt. Like, yeah, that part I think is pretty clear. They want him. They're tracking him.
Yeah.
As she notes, and the way he starts to break down, he's pulled back into the hex. As we were again discussing before the show, I thought it was interesting that the movie marquee in the background shows that their double feature of The Incredibles and The Parent Trap. You've already talked about the Parent Trap aspect of it and how this connects back to Wanda and Pietro's mom and dad. But The Incredibles part, I mean, obviously, like superhero family, right? That's kind of right there on the surface. But when Vision was, you know, pulling out of the hex and was drawn back, like his cape was sort of like the thing that the hex was holding on to, yanking back. And I just kept thinking of like, no capes, like the danger of capes from The Incredibles, as warned by Edna Mode. Then like he just kept getting pulled back piece by piece into the hex. And then of course the hex expands and swallows him again and he's made whole. So it didn't feel like he was being destroyed as much as he was being reclaimed.
Mean, that's certainly possible that like it was just a sucking back in rather than a falling apart sort of thing. But it feels to me like Wanda is afraid for him to leave the hex, like he can't survive out of the hex. Like at the end of that episode when he's like, you know, we can go anywhere. And she's like, nope, this is our home now.
Yeah.
Like I feel like he can't exist outside of the bubble, at least in his current form.
No, I think you're right.
Yeah, I thought it was interesting. Let me see. I wrote it down as I was rewatching who they brought in along with Darcy. Initially, it was like, a biologist, artificial intelligence, chemical engineer. Like, you know, an AI is something that the director mentions they're super preoccupied with at Sword. So, you know, like they want Vision and they want to weaponize Vision. And that is something Wanda absolutely would not want to let happen. So that's just all I mean by this like sort of two-pronged attack. You've got like sort of a mystical something feeding off of Wanda and you've got this more science forward governmental threat to Vision. So coming at them, you know, some people, there are theories that those two powers are working together. I don't know that I agree with that, though it's possible. But like either way, they're being hit on two sides at this point. Is sort of all that I'm trying to say. I mean, I am willing to go one step galaxy brain further and say one of my favorite bonkers brains theories that I saw is that someone mentioned that. Oh, let me look up what the anagram is for. But the people who build the Sentinel program in Marvel, which is an X-Men associated thing, but that the acronym for that is One, O-N-E, and so One Division. Came up with, yeah, which I thought was just like pretty brilliant. I don't know that it's true, but it's pretty fun and brilliant to think about. So yeah, just this idea of all of that. Okay, let's talk about mutants. All right, so we've got Monica going in and out of the hex, has done something to her body. We've talked before about this, about like the fact that she will become like a photon / spectrum superpowered character, mm-hmm. possibly because of it. But does that open up the possibility that anyone inside the hex, or certainly anyone who goes through the barrier like Darcy just did, like might become superpowered? And is that superpower almost like a mutant-y kind of power? Yeah. What do you think?
It's literally a mutation. She says you've gone through twice and it's changed your body on a cellular mm-hmm. level, which is a mutation. Yeah. Right. So the question, I think in X-Men, it's always just been sort of like a natural thing, like an evolutionary trait. And I mean, if the hex expands and swallows the world and some people get mutated by it and some people don't, well, that would explain the mutation. Right. And that would explain the existence of X-Men, except X-Men requires that we have characters who go back ages, you know, like Wolverine to maintain some continuity. I think you can't have a new Wolverine. Part of Wolverine's charm and appeal is that he's somewhat of an ancient, immortal kind of creature. So, yeah, I mean, we definitely are seeing a mutation effect from the Hex, but I don't know. Would you be satisfied by that if that was the explanation for how mutants turn up in the MCU?
I don't know. Someone mentioned that Kamala Khan lives in New Jersey. So if the hex bubble goes wide enough, could that be the origin of her powers? Would I be satisfied with that? I mean, like, what it would require is that we not revisit those legacy characters in the way that it felt like the arrival of Evan Peters sort of promised that we might be. So, I don't know. I'm open to it as a possibility. I think it would be interesting. I think it's a possibility, but I don't think it's a certainty, I guess is what I would say.
Did you, Nick, note that when she sees Quicksilver as a corpse with bullet holes in him, that he looks like, Evan Peters rather than Aaron Taylor Johnson?
Yeah. I mean, I honestly could not tell you what's going on exactly there. It's hard to track. You know what I mean? Because like,
that's why I think I've somewhat relented on my analysis of it. Cause I'm just like, all right, roll with it. See where this is going. Where are you going to drop me off?
If let's say it's Nightmare, like it behind everything with this, like, I mean, so you know, we keep hearing like what, like Cheer Up Sleepy Jean, like this like dream sort of idea, but like in showing these, the death of people, like the corpses of the people that she cares about most, isn't that the dream turning into a nightmare for Wanda? And isn't that like, wouldn't that sort of like jump her grief up and like feed whatever's potentially feeding off of her? I don't know. But I agree with you. Like, I mean, I don't know. I mean, like, there is a world in which they wanted Aaron Taylor Johnson for this and he wasn't available. Do you know what I mean? But it is weird to me that they showed us the Aaron Taylor Johnson bullet wounds on the Evan Peters body. Like, that's hard for me to track what that means. Do you know?
Mm-hmm.
So, yeah, it's true. Maybe I should just let go and let it wash on over me. But I'm so bad at letting things go. Lastly, I mean, I don't know. I don't have much else that I want to talk about. I talked to Richard about this already, but like the fact that they spent two episodes in a row hyping up this like guy that Monica's going to go meet. And she said guy this week. So unfortunately, I think that means our Riri Williams theory is out the window. It really feels to me like this is going to have to be a big deal for even more casual fans.
Yeah. You think?
I don't know. Like, for her to keep it mysterious for two episodes in a row, like, why would they do that if not to, like, hype it up? What do you think?
Yeah, and then there's that thing where she said there was going to be some epic cameo, like, I don't know.
I'm kind of back on the John Krasinski bandwagon. It's possible. I don't know.
You think?
I don't know. I don't know. I just feel like my instincts tell me that has to be something kind of like a popular theory right now is that it's Blue Marvel, who is this character who is Monica's love interest in the comics and stuff like that, and he is a scientist and he might fit the bill here, but like I just don't think that would be an oh my god I can't believe it moment for anyone other than like very devoted comics fans. And maybe that's who they're trying to cater to in that moment. But, like, why spend two episodes sort of, like, hyping whoever this person might be up, you know?
Yeah. Speaking of old songs, I keep thinking of, like, why would you build me up? Just let me down, right? Like, so they're definitely, you know, building some suspense with that,
yeah.
Right? And so it better pay off. And maybe that's the actor that
Paul Bettany's I'm talking about.
That Paul Bettany hinted at somebody he was dying to work with.
Maybe. I don't have a great answer for it. I just feel and I don't want to overpromise and underdeliver, but I just feel like it has to be like something, a moment, you know, for it to be hyped in that way, you know. So, or maybe I'm just overanalyzing. So it's possible. I tend to do that. Is there anything else you want to talk about? Like, how do you feel about like the way in which they're developing the kids and their powers? Like, how is that working out for you?
It makes me sad. And there's a lot of talk about kids in this episode, where they've been. They kind of imply that she's just sort of kept them in stasis, and you know, her brother, whoever is animating him, is talking about like the ethics of that, and
yeah,
you know, how you've kept couples together and the personalities are basically the same. And the kids, so if they're new creations and they're just sort of being grown in this greenhouse of the Hex, it makes me sad for them. Like, it's they clearly have feelings and they seem to be real people, not sort of evil avatars. So, yeah, I don't know. I like how they're developing, and I just think it's a strange. I mean, talk about like not having a real childhood, right? It's sort of what we're seeing happen with them, but also that's what happens with Vision, right? Remember his famous line from Age of Ultron as well. I was born yesterday, you know, or born last week, or whatever it is that he says, indicating his sort of new existence. So yeah, you know, I'm okay seeing where they go from here. Are they going to grow up fast? Are they going to be humans or humans?
I think they're going to be teens soon. That
are they
going to
be adults
guess.
By the yeah. time this show ends?
I think we're going to get teens so that, you know, they could be young Avengers age, but we'll see.
Yeah, that's true. I mean, I'm a little bit curious. There was one line that we haven't discussed that Herb says. When, you know, he's dressed as Frankenstein, he's like the neighborhood watch, and he's like, you know, there are all these little moments where they break the fourth wall, or I don't know if, yeah, I guess it's the fourth wall, and the audience is now the fifth wall. But like, he's like, do you need me to change something for you? And like, that made me wonder, like, is he just asking, like, do you need me to do something different? Or is he somehow in control? Is he, you know, he was the one who was cutting through the wall with the hedge clippers,
yeah.
Right? So, like, you know, was he just asking, like, as a performer, or is he the producer, right? Do you need something different? I'm not quite sure.
Speaking of titles, I do think it's interesting that, you know, the head of S.W.O.R.D. is referred to as the director. If we're talking about like who's engineering, who's controlling a TV show, isn't it the director, you know, sort of thing. That's a good question about Herb. You know, I was rewatching that scene with Herb and Agnes in episode 3 at the hedge, where he's like, they're trying to talk about Monica to Vision, but also constrained by whatever it is that Wanda has sort of like blocked them on or whatever. And he says, you know, she's here because we're all, and then Agnes gives him like a real don't say it look. You know. So for me, I think Herb is just like constantly trying, kind of struggling out from under the control. Maybe he's the controller. That would be a fun twist. But for me, I feel like he's just one of those characters who keeps sort of trying to keep struggling out of the muzzle that's been put on them. Do you know?
Yeah. Yeah. I think maybe that's more accurate.
All right. Anything else we want to talk about? The kiddos, Pietro. I mean, I do think this was like a really, really fantastic recreation of an episode of Malcolm in the Middle.
Malcolm in the Middle. Yeah,
just
the
wild,
tone.
You know?
Right down.
Yeah.
I love the way they're combining the goofy, like the feel good elements of a sitcom with. And they bring in the disturbing parts. You almost don't realize how weird it is until it's really weird. You know, it's that sort of bopping snare drum music of that keeps things very light while Vision is exploring the town and seeing sort of the people on the periphery who aren't being as active. They're just a little bit more like a matte painting frozen in time. And like it has the kind of fun Malcolm in the Middle music, and yet it's this haunting sequence and the music gradually fades down. And I thought that was very well done. They do a great job of breaking down the tone of the shows that they're spoofing.
Yeah, absolutely. It's,
it's a really inventive show. I really have to say, I love that they've really gone for it here and used their imaginations to come up with something that's new. This is not your traditional superhero show. So it's really working. And the fact that it's thrown us for such a loop, despite our best efforts to crack the code, is a real testament to, I guess, the writers, Jack Schaefer and, you know, the whole team at Marvel that came up with this show.
Yeah, I'm really excited to see, you know, presumably next week is the sort of Modern Family Office direct address to camera episode. And I think that I'm also really excited to see what they potentially do with that. But I think in terms of, I mean, I think I loved the Dick Van Dyke Show episode. I loved the Bewitched episode. But I think in terms of just like, just really thoroughly nailing something that I wasn't even like, I guess it's different to see a pastiche of something that you've like lived through. Right. And so I got like a visceral, like in the cells of my body memory of 90s sitcoms while watching, like, especially the opening sequence of this. Like, there's that one shot where like the boys are talking about Uncle Pietro and he's on the couch asleep and the camera's just like focused in on him there in soft focus in the background, and he opens his eyes and it's just like perfect. It was perfect.
Yeah.
90s sitcom stuff. So yeah.
That great technique of the split, is it called the split diopter, where two separate shots merge together so you have like everything in focus, like is also like really, I always love seeing those shots in movies. Like they kind of stick out. They're not that common anymore, but like yeah, that is sort of the language of the Malcolm in the Middle sitcom, and I dug it.
All right, well, I mean, I think we did it. I think we'll see what's next in store for us on WandaVision. We will try our best to figure out, or just let it just let it wash over us. Either way, we're enjoying it. So that's WandaVision. All right, well, that's it for us this week. You can always email us, stillwatchingpod@gmail.com. Sorry I didn't get to more of your emails this week, but they're all fantastic. I love hearing everyone's theories and thoughts, and please send more kind and loving words towards Anthony Breznik again. We got a lovely email about him this week that I forwarded over, and it made his day. So, you know, send those over. stillwatchingpod@gmail.com. You can find me on Twitter @JoeWroteThis. You can find Richard on Twitter @Vialaws. Anthony Breznik, where can folks find your great work?
Find
if you're
me
looking
typing
for
away.
It
I'm on VanityFair.com writing away. And Perfect. Anybody out there who can help us crowdsource, what is the film in the background of the town square scare? It looked like some kind of zombie film. I couldn't tell if it's Plan 9 from Outer Space or Night of the Living Dead. I was trying to freeze frame it and figure it out, but it has eluded me. So if anybody out there knows, give us a shout.
All right. Well, shout us out. Stillwatchingpod@gmail.com, or you can tweet at me or something like that. And until next week, stay safe in your Halloween tours of a haunted neighborhood, and we will see you next week.
Want to stay up to date on the biggest stories in pop culture and entertainment? Then be sure to check out the TMZ podcast. I'm Charlie Cotton from TMZ, the TV show, and every day I'll sit down with a member of our news team to give exclusive breakdowns of the day's most talked about headlines, stories we break, and the stories you care about. So check out the TMZ podcast, Monday through Friday, and the other podcasts from the TMZ audio network like Last Days and TMZ Verified, available on all podcast platforms.